what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mr. Robert Bernardini, and we're talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health, The Comprehensive Guide to Understanding, Preventing, and Reversing Disease. And this is an excellent book. We're going to be carrying the book because we think that every one of you out there needs to get it and read it. It's not that expensive. It's well written. It covers in a very concise form so many of the things that you need to know, not only about children's health, but about your own health. Mr. Bernardini, thanks so very much for being with us.
Yeah, hi. You're welcome, Dr. Stan.
All right, now, of course, what motivated you to write the book?
Well, a couple things. One was the what happened in Columbine and the other schools a few years back, and it seemed like every week there was another school shooting. And I was scratching my head thinking, you know, what's going on with these kids? Why are they mutilating each other and doing all these outrageous things? A lot of people look at it as a sociological problem, something that, you know, they weren't cared for in the home properly, or bad family life, or something along those lines, sociological or psychological. And I knew with my toxicological background and medical background that there could be more to it than that. And so I started investigating things that might happen with behavior problems that resulted from maybe toxic reactions from things in our environment. And there was another thing that dovetailed into that was information from the Price-Pottinger Foundation about nutritional studies with the cats, and also the work of Weston A. Price, a dentist who traveled the world in the 30s looking at cultures that had not been touched by white man's cultural patterns yet, and looking at disease patterns and things like that. So I kind of put the two together and started investigating different aspects of all of that, and started realizing that a lot of these behavioral problems, sociological problems, really started with problems in our organism. Our physiology basically has gone awry.
And of course, I think that was really one of the most fascinating things I learned there, about those studies that showed the relationship between high blood levels and aggressive behavior. And of course, what most people don't understand is that, you know, for instance, if you're in an area with fluoridated water and you check the blood levels in those children, they will have an elevated blood level. Why would they have an elevated blood level if there's fluoride in the water? Well, very simply because it attacks the solder in the copper pipes, and they have copper pipes. At least this is the theory. Have you heard about that, children having elevated blood levels of lead when there's fluoride in the water?
Well, I can't remember specifically, but I know that things like that happen. You know, there's a lot of toxicological interactions that go on, and you know, a classic example is the lead paint, lead in paint, and the lead that used to be in the gasoline, and they finally realized that you know, this can hurt us.
Of course, but it can hurt our children in terrible, terrible ways.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. Robert Bernardini, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health. And I think you'll be fascinated by the information that he's accumulated from scientific sources. It's a well-documented book, and you want to have it, you want to read it, you want to get it to your children and to your grandchildren. If you care about them, there are things you're not going to get through regular channels that you'll find in this book. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Robert Bernardini. Where are we going to start? Do you want to start talking about lead and its implications?
We can do that.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, lead is a toxic heavy metal, and ingestion of it tends to accumulate with time. It's not something that's easily expelled from the system. One of the ideas of the downfall of Rome was because Romans made pipes out of lead, and lead kind of came out of the pipes, and it disintegrated, and people drank it from their water supply. I mean, they even say that Nero might have gone crazy because of lead poisoning, and that's what caused the Rome burning incident there. So it's a neurological poison that's easily accumulated. It bioaccumulates, and all of these heavy metals have a tendency to do that.
What's the relationship between, say, increased blood levels of lead or increased levels of lead in the hair and violent behavior?
Yeah, there is a direct correlation with that. And I'd have to put my finger on the exact studies. I don't have them right in my memory banks here. But there are several studies that have been done that show that if you do have a higher elevated level of lead in your body, in your tissues, which reflects in the hair analysis, that, you know, you will have a more of a tendency to become violent, and different kind of sociological problems will result because of that. And it's unfortunate because we haven't realized that, and the steps to, you know, alleviate the lead problem have been taking place, and a lot of work has been done here in America. But I mean, for an example, Australia, I think it was, banned lead in paints in 1919. So it's been well known and well documented for a long, long time, but the lead in the paint makes it easier to use. And it's kind of like a fungicide, and it's something that made painting easier and more economical, so they kept it in.
All right, fine. Now, of course, how can people avoid lead? And certainly it was out of gasoline, it's out of paints. What other exposure do we have to lead?
Well, it's really not. I mean, there are still a lot of things. Lead does not get out of the environment very easily. Just like it's stored in the body, it's also stored in the environment. And there's still things that are out there that you really kind of need to be aware of. Children playing in dirt, there might be some still from gasoline from years ago. The thing with the lead in the paints, if the paint hasn't been removed correctly, there still could be dust, and that dust doesn't go away very easily, and you know,
hold
the kid could ingest it.
Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're talking about, the danger of lead. And, of course, as Robert's saying, lead is all around us. It's in paint. But once it gets into the environment, why it stays there more or less indefinitely, it's awfully hard to get out. And it's known how toxic lead is. Some people think that perhaps even Beethoven had died of lead poisoning, and they've examined his hair, and I think it was 1,000 times more lead. He had a lead goblet, and he used to drink his wine out of the lead goblet. It seems so innocuous. And yet this is something that's so violently, so very, very dangerous, and so many of our children, so many of our children's toys have had intolerable levels of lead in them. So are we getting any control over this, or is it still a problem?
Yeah, there is a lot of effort in that direction. The CDC has publications. There's programs that are, involved in decreasing lead in the environment and cleaning up houses and that sort of thing. And it is still a problem, but I think it's getting better, and our awareness is there, so it is getting better. You know, there's no more lead in paint. There's no more lead in gasoline. But these things, when people are grasping for reasons why their children are doing something, some things, I mean, there's explanations for these things.
And of course, you point out the marked increase in the number of cases of autism.
Autism and ADHD, even things such as tiredness, irritability, loss of appetite, constipation, nervous system problems, hearing damage. There's a whole bunch of things that can happen with a toxic reaction or a toxic buildup in what we're talking about here is lead. IQ problems, all sorts of things. So, you know, it's sometimes you look at parts of society and you look at areas, and some scientists have done correlations between things. And one of the things that you were talking about, you started this off with lead, well, there have been studies done with aggressive behavior, basically criminal behavior in certain areas of the country. And it's clearly been established that places that have higher levels of pollution also have higher levels of crime.
Higher levels of what now? Gluten?
Any real kind of pollution. They didn't,
pollution, okay.
Yeah, they lumped it together. They didn't say just lead or mercury or whatever, but they got an overall picture of what the pollution level like in certain areas of the country were, and they looked at criminal behavior, and there were higher. They've also done blood work and tissue analysis on inmates, and they've shown different things elevated in inmate, propensity.
You're talking now about inmates in prisons across America.
Right.
This can actually lead to criminal activity then.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're irritable all the time and you're fearful and different things are happening, and it's basically a short-circuiting in the nervous system and the brain, where these elements, these minerals, are taking the place of some other substance that should be there. And it's creating kind of just, the machine doesn't work as well. The computer is missing a chip or two, let's say. And our mental function and our resulting behavior often changes because of those things.
Well, now, what about some of the other things that our children are subjected to? Something like a NutraSweet or aspartame. There's some people who say that this is harmful. Is it?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely is. There have been a lot of studies done, and it's clearly been shown that these things are really not good at all for the kids and for anybody. But there's been studies done, and they've taken apart these compounds, and they've showed a lot of things that behavioral problems, different digestive problems, epilepsy, seizure problems, just all sorts of things that happen with these artificial sweeteners. And it's just a tragedy that nobody is recognizing these things enough to the point where and there are people out there doing this work, but the mainstream doesn't know this. And they're not going to know it because the mainstream media controls the media, and the corporations control the media. So aspartame saves them money, and so they keep saying that it's okay.
Well, now, of course, how does aspartame impact on the individual? How does it impact on our children? What harm can it do?
Well, it's a neurological poison that gets in there. It dissociates into different compounds that are just neurologically incompatible with us, wood alcohol and formaldehyde and different carcinogens. It just affects the nervous system, cellular mechanisms, and biological systems.
Well, no, I understand it produces pathological obesity, and in animals, certainly we hear so much today about, so much obesity, it's all Colonel Sanders' fault, it's all Mr. McDonald's fault, it's all, Carl's Jr.'s fault, it's the fast foods. Oh, if we just had more exercise, everything would be all right. But have you read any of the studies that suggest that NutraSweet can be directly related to this epidemic of pathological obesity?
It can be linked to those things because it affects our neurological functioning, and it actually affects the apostat, the part of the brain that turns on and off our appetite. And we're thinking we're seeing one thing, and yet our body is still crying out for other things. So it becomes a vicious circle of eating and consuming these things, and then yet we get those things, the calories, and yet there's no nutritional value behind those.
And of course, doesn't it certainly have an effect on the endocrine system? I mean, isn't it certainly, you've already mentioned the neurological toxicity. There's some people even say that it's a carcinogen, and it predisposes us to diabetes. And diabetes, the incidence of diabetes, is skyrocketing across America. And so many people are being told to, eat aspartame so they won't eat sugar.
I know. Well, they say that. I mean, it's just the effects of the, the different things that can happen are just dazzling as far as the reactions to this product. It goes all across the board: headaches and hearing problems, nausea, diarrhea, all sorts of things with the urinary tract. I can even kill people and create seizures. In fact, airline pilots have been advised not to drink sodas with artificial sweeteners in them because they promote seizure activity. And yet the National Epileptic Association condones the use of it. So go figure that out.
Well, I think that sometimes the people who pay the piper call the tune, and they are dependent, I'm sure, on certain people for their donations. And the trouble is that so many of our professional organizations are giving out faulty information that's harmful. Now, we've mentioned, of course, the aspartame. What about our vaccines? What influence do vaccines have? We're told, oh, we're so much healthier since we started taking vaccines, and yet we see a massive rise of juvenile diabetes. We see a massive rise of juvenile allergy, and we see a massive rise of juvenile asthma, and we see this, frightening incidence of neurodevelopmental abnormality. And you quote the CDC's figures: 1 in 6 American children has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, and about 1 in 166 has frank, autism with just total disruption of the ability of that child to think. What relationship, do vaccines play towards any of these things we've talked about?
Well, the vaccines are generally preserved with a compound called thimerosal, and the main ingredient of thimerosal is ethyl mercury. So when somebody gets a flu shot or a vaccine against some other disease, there's probably thimerosal in there and mercury, and amongst other things, like formaldehyde is also used as a preservative in vaccines, which is a carcinogen. But the main problem with the vaccines has to do with the thimerosal and the mercury. And there's been a lot of effort in that direction to eliminate those things, and actually the government has made recommendations to get it out, but I don't think those things are being enforced.
And we're still using it on in the childhood vaccines throughout the world. Supposedly they were going to take it out of childhood vaccines in America, but then they left it in the influenza vaccine, and then they recommend every 6-month-old and every pregnant woman get a shot of for influenza, knowing full well it's got toxic doses of thimerosal in it. Why would they do anything that stupid?
Well, they deny that there's any relationship between the thimerosal and the mercury in any kind of disease or abnormality.
But if that's true, then why did they take it out of childhood vaccines?
Well, they said something to the effect of, we don't think it's causing anything, but we want to be extra safe.
But then why did they leave it in the childhood vaccines for the rest of the world? They want to be safe with Americans, but they don't want to be safe with children in Africa and South America and the Orient?
Well, those people haven't made an issue of it, I guess, and they don't know any better. And it's easier and cheaper to make these vaccines and to use them so that they're preserved for as long as they want with the thing, than to tell these people that they, to give them the option that maybe they should get something without it. They also have an issue of when they manufacture these vaccines, they manufacture them in lots, a bunch of vaccines at once they make. And they don't want to have to dispose of this. They want to make it so that they can use those things up even if they've been shown to be faulty or, with something that's a problem. So they manipulate things again to make it so that it fits their agendas.
And we know, for instance, that back in 1960, they knew that there was a cancer-producing virus in the original polio vaccine, the Sabin vaccine. But they used it up anyway.
That's right.
Well, we're going to change it. We're going to make some new that won't have the cancer virus in it. But that's all right. We'll just use up what we have. What madness is that? Or is it madness? Is there perhaps another agenda out there? Under any circumstances, we're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. Robert Bernardini. His book is The Truth About Children's Health. And if you love your children, and if you care about them and your grandchildren, you need to get this book. You need to read it. And, of course, it could help you as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. My guest is Robert Bernardini, and we've been talking about these things that really can be so harmful. We've been talking about the danger of the thimerosal in the vaccines. But what about the vaccines themselves? What about the aluminum they put in there as an adjuvant? Doesn't it have deleterious effects as well?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the aluminum, formaldehyde, all those things are deleterious, and they mount up again. Those things are bioaccumulative, and they mount up in the body and they cause a lot of problems. I mean, the aluminum has been implicated in Alzheimer's disease. I think it also has an implication in bladder problems. And this is not just for children. I mean, this thing, like I said, the Alzheimer's dementia, this is something that starts out early. You might not see signs of it, but as you grow and accumulate this stuff in here, it mounts up until finally when you're maybe in your 60s or something, you start feeling a difference and you can't function as well.
I thought it was so interesting. Within the last couple of days, there was an article that appeared in the paper in big headlines. A dental study proves that, you know, no danger from dental fillings, mercury, from silver fillings. And of course, they admitted that the silver fillings are half mercury. But then, of course, what was so interesting, if you read the study, you found out that they took children and they followed them for 5 or 7 years. And I think the children were somewhere between 3 and 4 and about 8 years of age. And they followed them for 7 years. And they said, well, see, there's no evidence, you know, that these children with mercury fillings have any different levels, you know, of the blood levels or urine excretion levels than children, you know, who only have ceramic fillings, because they filled one set of teeth with ceramic and the other with mercury. And then if you read the article, you found, well, yes, initially there really was a very high level of mercury, but it gradually went down, and just because it was constantly being vented in the system, you couldn't find any difference in the urine. But that was only after a while. Initially there was a marked difference, and then somebody said, but of course what this proves is after 5 to 7 years there's no problem, but what happens after 20 or 30 years? We really don't know. And it's amazing how they can use those headlines to deceive us, isn't it?
Well, it's also that amazing that they were looking in the wrong place for it, because if they're using urine analysis or even blood analysis, the heavy metals and some of these pollutants don't show up in that. You would have to do a tissue mineral analysis to see this, because, again, they are actually what is called lipophilic, which means they're fat-loving, and they get stored and put away in different fat cells in the body, and they're not in circulation like in the urine or the blood.
And I think that's really such an important point. Why are they looking in the urine and blood? The problem is that certain people can't excrete this from their systems. If they can excrete it, there's no problem. It's the ones that can't excrete it and are maintaining that terrible poison, one of the most terrible poisons we know, and they're maintaining it, you know, in the brain.
Yeah, well, mercury, I think, is one of the top three worst minerals in the world. I mean, or pollutants or toxins in the world. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And the thing that is also amazing is that the FDA or government officials might say that women shouldn't eat so much fish, especially when they're pregnant, because of the mercury levels in it. And yet they're giving vaccines with mercury in it, the same mercury, the same configuration of mercury, to the children and to the parents and to the mothers also.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? It just doesn't make any sense. We're so concerned about the mercury in fish, and yet we give it to our children, and of course until recently in the nursery itself.
Well, here's a
hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Robert Bernardini. We're talking about the mercury in the vaccines, which, of course, they finally have decided to take out of childhood vaccines, but they leave it in the influenza vaccine, and they tell you, oh, if you love your child, you're going, of course, to take an influenza shot. We give it to pregnant women so it can concentrate in the brains of their unborn children who are going to do the most harm. And, of course, we give it to the elderly, and we know it. They have, after they take their influenza shots, they have a 1,000% increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease if they've taken those shots regularly. And if you doubt that, we'll be glad to send you the copy of Dr. Pudenberg's website, and you can check it out for yourself. You can call us at 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the Dr. Pudenberg, Pudenberg. His website. And the tragedy is the average individual doesn't understand that there are people in government that are recommending that the elderly and pregnant women and 6-month-old children take a influenza shot that is known to do harm to children. Why would anybody want that?
Yeah, I mean, because they the the people making the recommendations are basically the spokespeople of the industry. And although it doesn't look like that, it may be governmental officials, although most of the people that work for the FDA, a lot of them, a high percentage of them, at one time worked for a private company, or they end up going to a private company, like a pharmaceutical company. So these things are very much slanted in the way that they want them to sound, and they can manipulate some of the data sometimes, or the way that it's presented, just like what we were talking about, the mercury in the blood versus mercury in the tissues. If they knew what they were doing, they would be doing a tissue analysis instead of a blood analysis, but they might know what they're doing, and they do it on purpose to say, look, there's no additional mercury in the blood. So, who knows? But really, from most of the research I've done in all sorts of areas, if you're talking about milk pasteurization or chlorine or fluoride or lead in paint or vaccines, the underlying thing that comes along time after time after time is that the reason why things are being done the way they are now, regardless of what the truth behind the health issues are, is because those are the cheapest ways to do it. And the industry that's promoting it this way makes more money doing it the way that they want it done, even though it's harming our individuals, our children, and our society as a whole.
Well, let's get a little bit into the background of fluoride, because this is one of my favorite things. What about the water fluoridation? Certainly, the dentists and the doctors will tell the average individual that this is beneficial. It's cutting down on dental cavities. And if you love children, why are you going to fluoridate the water?
Well, there's been no real scientific proof to show that, for one thing.
But why are they advocating? Because the doctors all advocated?
Because
the dentists all advocated?
This all started back, I think it was in the 40s. They used fluoride in the manufacture of the atomic bomb, and it's also used in the manufacture of fertilizers, and it was used in the manufacture of other wartime items, and actually it's the waste product of some of these things, and they needed to dispose of it. So they found a way that they found this thing, this what happened in this small town, where the fluoride level was elevated, and these kids or the people didn't have many dental cavities, which later the whole thing was found to be false anyway. There was no correlation made to it. But the statements were made that fluoride can help with the cavities. And the press went nuts with it, and this was all set up, and this was all devised to get rid of the waste product from these industries, so that they didn't have to bury it in a hazardous waste landfill, which it was considered a hazardous waste. So instead, they drip it into the water supply, and they say it's good for you.
And, of course, this really is the most incredible story. And those of you who've read our material on fluoride, or as you get into this book, it lists so many great studies that have been done to show you that, first of all, the people, the lawyers and the scientists and the engineers who work for the EPA all want to stop water fluoridation. It is being kept in there by government employees that put from the executive branch of government, who has a vested interest in allowing the constant poisoning of a large segment of our population. And if any of you would like to actually check what we're saying, we actually have that study from the National Treasury Employees Union 280. It's NTEU280.org, NTEU280.org. You can find it up on the Internet, or if you want to get a copy of it from us, give us a copy at 1-800-544-8927. They've pleaded, you know, with the EPA, they pleaded with Congress to stop fluoridating our water and harming our children. And, of course, totally ignored by the controlled media. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Robert Bernardini. Now, Robert, you actually go into a little of this about the employees' union at the EPA, don't you?
Yeah, I touch on that with the number of people that are working for the EPA that end up going to private industries like pharmaceutical industries at higher salaries, and then they have effects going back. You know, they have ties back in the industry that they can get governmental policies to be changed or whatever. So I talk about that to some degree, yeah.
But of course, you even talk, though, about the engineers who really want to stop the water fluoridation. You talk about Dr. Hersey, who we've talked to a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And about Phyllis Molinex. Now, who is Phyllis Molinex, and why is her study so important?
Well, she did a study on rats and humans, and really rats are probably the best thing that we have as far as a study organism go. Their blood type is very similar to humans, so we use them as things. And it showed that the women who drink fluoridated water and ingest fluoride are a lot more likely to have hyperactive kids. So another thing that's interesting is sodium fluoride is the active ingredient in rat poison. And also Prozac, the main active ingredient in there is also a fluoride compound, and it has a tendency to really, in one way, easy way to say it, is to make you a couch potato. It makes you kind of docile. You don't really care about things as much. It calms you down. I mean, these hyperactive people or people that are depressed, it makes things more palatable for them. It basically deadens them in a way. And that's what is in our flora, in our drinking water.
And, of course, any of you would like to actually see the summary of Phyllis Molinex's paper, we have that in our syllabus on water fluoridation. It's called The Hidden Agenda. That's The Hidden Agenda. It's a great syllabus, even if I do say so. But there's so much of this information that you need to understand. You need to realize the scientific studies are all there. But when a government employee tries to tell the truth, why he endangers his job, his pension, his health care, and his security. And so most of the government employees won't speak out. But here recently, you know, I think it was 7,000 employees of the EPA risked everything to tell the American people. They were the lawyers, the engineers, the scientists who worked for the EPA, and their unions got together and demanded that they stop fluoridating the water, wrote to the senators, wrote to the EPA, and not a word in the controlled media. How could that possibly have happened unless, of course, somebody is trying to conceal the truth from the American?
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this is Robert Bernardini, and we're talking about his book, The Truth About Children's Health, The Comprehensive Guide to Understanding, Preventing, and Reversing Disease. So why don't you pick up a story about some of the other diseases, Robert?
Well, the one thing that I'm a little, you know, in more focused on than others is the ADHD. The learning disabilities and the brain problems there and all the physiological problems that are resulting because of the neurological deficits that our children are having. And there's a lot of things going on here where kids have to be in special programs. They can't learn anymore. They're either hyperactive or they just don't have any inclination to do anything. The kids have problems thinking, they have problems completing tasks, and all sorts of different, really, possibly behavioral problems, what they see, but really underlying it are problems with, like, the lead poisoning or the mercury poisoning, different things that happen where the way children are taught these days doesn't allow the proper development of the neural function in the brain. All the TV that they see doesn't allow certain parts of the brain to develop correctly. Now kids are on computers and typing away when really doing handwriting is a lost art. And that actual handwriting activates certain parts of the brain that make learning easier, more effective, and coordinate things. So there's a lot of different avenues here to look at, not just the toxicological, but things like that, the TV, the way the full spectrum light is important for the eye and the development of the endocrine system and different hormonal reactions, you know, different ways to learn versus the TV. All sorts of things enter into this, and it's showing in our kids that have these problems, and they're really becoming a burden on society.
And of course, one of the interesting things, you notice the marked increase in the number of brain tumors in our children. And back in 1940, 1.95 per 100,000. By 1975, 4.25 per 100,000. And the incidence of brain tumors keeps increasing. We know there's a very definite relationship, apparently, between aspartame and brain tumors in animals. So why are they giving aspartame to our children?
Yeah, well, that's another thing. I mean, these things with the soft drinks and different additives in candy or different treats that kids might want. And you know, another problem with this, and when you're talking about the brain cell development, I just want to touch on cancer for a second. Everybody's all, you know, perplexed and wondering what cancer is all about. And really, it's a deranged cell. It's a cell in the body that's gone crazy. And when the cell actually feels threatened because it's close to death, and when an organism feels close to death, what it does is it reproduces like crazy to make sure that it continues, that its strain or its generation continues. And that's what happens in cancer. And the cell feels like it's close to death, so it starts reproducing like crazy. Well, the brain tumor thing, that's no surprise. If we're having all these heavy metal accumulations and other poisons that are lipophilic, which are fat-loving poisons, and the brain is 60% fat, it's no wonder that a lot of those poisons get lodged in our brain and nervous system, and calling not just brain problems, but chronic fatigue or multiple sclerosis, you know, nervous system problems. But it's no surprise that those things are in an increase as our environment has been polluted more and more with these bioaccumulative lipophilic compounds. So they accumulate in there. The cell is poisoned, basically. It senses that it's close to death, and it starts reproducing like crazy. If you remove the toxins and the poisons, there wouldn't be the cancer there. I've been in medical school, and I've seen the research, and I know what they're doing with cancer research, and they're basically looking at ways to stop the proliferation of the cells. They're basically looking at ways to kill the cancer. And that's not a preventive measure. That's a treatment that they're trying to get after all the damage is started, and the organism is on the wrong track anyway. What we have to do is remove the causes. And the causes, in a lot of cases, are these toxics that we've been exposed to for generations now that never were in our diet or our environment, that we have not adapted to in any way, and that are causing all this havoc in our biochemical reactions.
Most people believe that Americans are healthier than people elsewhere in the world, but if you look at the incidence, rising incidence of heart disease, the rising incidence of cancer, the rising incidence of diabetes, and of pulmonary disease, you know, we've got real problems in this country health-wise, don't we?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And one of the things, and I don't know if you had a chance to read that chapter I was telling you about, the ancestry factor, but one of the unique things about my book, I mean, you can read a lot about the increase in all sorts of diseases. I mean, that's obvious everywhere. The problem here, and this gets to do back with the Price-Pottinger Foundation, the problem, one of the problems here is not just for us right now, but this is a problem that has been accumulating over time and generations, and will continue to accumulate over time and generations. It's not just right now. It's like 50 years from now, what's going to happen because of all these things? And you're going to see this, and you're seeing it already, and you mentioned the brain cancers and stuff in children. They never used to get brain cancers. But what this research did with the Price-Pottinger Foundation, and I could get into the specifics of the study, which was a 10-year study, was that it showed that when the organism is under stress, like we have been, because of a deficient diet, which our diets are deficient because the soils are deficient, or a toxicological reaction, what happens is the first generation that's exposed to that deficiency or that toxicity will get sick. They'll be able to handle it for a while until they're in old age, and then they'll start to succumb to the illness. the next generation is not as strong, and it will succumb to the deficiency or the toxicity sooner in their life, in middle age. The next generation will succumb in early age, and the next generation might have trouble reproducing because it's just not strong enough. So this is a progression of things. And one thing that I talk about in my book is this progression and how I use 1940 as the benchmark of us getting into our plastic world, our chemical world, our artificial fertilizer world, where the soils are not replenished with all of the necessary nutrients, so our plants are deficient, our cattle are deficient, the meat is deficient, everything is deficient, and they showed that with studies that are detailed by the U.S. government agricultural society papers. And they show that our soils are deficient. So if, and this all started like in 1940 because the artificial fertilizer industry started because, again, that is an outgrowth of World War with compounds that they used to get rid of instead of disposing of them, they turned them into fertilizers. And insecticides mostly. So if you look at 1940 as the start of this degeneration in our environment and our food supply, and a generation is 30 years, period, basically. So the first generation would have lived from 1940 to 1970. The second generation from 1970 to 2000. The third generation will basically be done with around 2030. And if you plot the incidences of childhood diseases, you're going to see that there's an increase in these diseases as time goes on in this period. And people are coming down with, I mean, some kids now are even thinking they're going to, you know, teenage girls, they drink so much soda, they're going to have osteoporosis when they're teenagers.
But now, why are they going to have that? Why the artificial drinks, the diet drinks, you know, actually give them osteoporosis?
Why would that happen? Because they're very acidic compounds. There's a lot of acid, phosphoric acid in the soft drinks. And in order for the body to maintain its proper pH, blood pH, which has to be around 7.4, then you're putting all that acid in your body. You need to neutralize it. And it's just like a farmer liming his field. He puts calcium on his field to get the pH corrected because it's too acidic. So when we drink or eat acidic foods, we have to rob calcium from our bones and muscles to neutralize that, or the blood pH is going to plummet and you can end up in coma or death. So you're robbing calcium out of the bones, and that's why people get osteoporosis. They've been eating and consuming acidic foods and beverages for most of their lives, and finally the bone is too, all the calcium has been taken out of it, and it gets spongy, and you have hip fractures. It's not strong enough, and you get osteoporosis.
And so some of these new medications they have to prevent osteoporosis are really have all sorts of complications associated with them. If you eat well, you get plenty of vitamin D. If you get lots of sunlight, you know,
right.
Why, of course, it's really going to help you. You need to be out in the sun. If you're not in the sun, then you should be taking significant amounts of vitamin D. And it takes an awful lot before you get vitamin D intoxication. I mean, I used to get 50,000 units of vitamin D twice a week to many of our elderly people, you know. And you didn't get vitamin D intoxication from that, so you need large supplements of vitamin D.
Right. And, you know, when we're talking about calcium, most people automatically think, well, I need to drink more milk. In this day and age, with the pasteurization of commercial milk, I wouldn't do that. There actually shows that if you drink milk that's been pasteurized, you do get a negative calcium balance, which means, again, the calcium is being drawn out of your bones.
And, of course, if you drink a lot of milk, you'll have a higher incidence of prostate cancer in males. You'll have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And there are all sorts of studies on this
kind
of thing.
And the main reason for that is because the calcium that has been pasteurized is very difficult for the body to handle and metabolize, and it gets deposited in different places, and you get calcification. That's why arthritis might happen, or calcification of your arteries, because this calcium that is that has been pasteurized has lost its ability to be really metabolized correctly by the body, and it's seen almost like a piece of cement. You know, when we were, when I was a kid, we used to make these things with flour and water on a map, and then you'd paint it with food color, you know, when you're like in second grade. And, you know, some of these substances, like the white flour or the calcium in the milk, they get very hard and brittle, and the body can't handle them, and they get deposited in places that create problems. So if you're drinking raw milk, that does not happen because the calcium can be metabolized. If you're eating raw cheese, that's not going to happen. But anything that's been pasteurized is going to give you problems as far as your calcium goes.
All right, fine. Well, there's so much. Certainly, the diets that we're consuming now are not adequate diets, and people really need to learn about nutrition. I believe that people should be taking supplements because there's certain things, no matter, you're not going to be able to eat enough fruits really to give you sufficient vitamin C. You need to be taking vitamin C supplements because there are only three animals that don't produce their own vitamin C. They're fruit bats, you know, hamsters, and human beings. And, of course, the veterinarians, always they have diets for hamsters with large doses of vitamin C in them. But you sure don't see them for human beings that way.
Yeah, I know. But there's something you need to be careful of also with the supplements, too. And you need to get good natural supplements and kind of like food source kind of supplements. Just vitamin C out of the local drugstore is probably not a bioavailable kind of vitamin C. So you need to get good, clean, and there's another thing with the supplements is that they use certain additives sometimes that really create problems with digestion. So even though you might have, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, if they have potassium, dicalcium phosphate or magnesium stearate in there, it's going to hinder the absorption. So that gets to be a tricky situation there with the supplementation. And although we need those high things, and if you find a good supplement, I think it's a good idea to do it. And that's a whole big research project in itself. But eating, fresh fruits and vegetables that are organic, organically raised, have, 30% more nutritional value. And that's going to help to offset that deficient, the deficiencies with the dietary thing.
Well, certainly people have said we are what we eat, and proper nutrition is so vitally important. But there's so many things. If you actually look at the health of our children, I mean, our children get excessively obese, and it's not simply because they're not exercising enough. They don't exercise because they're obese, but many of the children are obese because they're drinking all these diet drinks. Have you ever noticed that all the fat people drink the diet drinks and
yeah.
they seem to get fatter?
Yeah.
Why? Because the aspartame in there produces pathological obesity, and they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just keep right on selling them, and they never tell the public the truth about how toxic these substances are.
I know. It's really amazing. I mean, when they ban diet sodas in the cockpit because the pilot might end up with a seizure, and this was reported in numerous aviation magazines, there's got to be a problem. And how they cannot recognize that and tell them, tell epileptics not to use it and actually recommend aspartame for it, with the National Epileptic people doing that. I mean, it's a crime. It's just unbelievable that they would do that. And it comes down to money, really, and politics. And it's a shame. And that's why you have to do things and dig and find the results out there that are unbiased, and they're not doing it for corporate profits.
All right, fine. Well, I think the book is excellent. That book is called The Truth About Children's Health, The Comprehensive Guide to Understanding, Preventing, and Reversing Disease. And some of these diseases you actually can reverse. There are lots of things you can do. But, of course, the primary thing you want to do is stop taking in the toxins, the fluoride, the aluminum, the mercury. The aluminum is in all of the vaccines. But people don't understand that. They put it in it so that they will create an inflammatory response, and they do. An inflammatory response, unlike anything normal, it goes on many times for years,
right.
And many times it can affect the brain.
Mm-hmm. And there are ways to try to get some of this stuff out. Some foods are good for pulling certain things out, like cilantro and parsley. If you make juice with, you know, those things, they have a tendency to latch on to, like, the mercury or the lead and pull them out of the system. So there are ways to address these things. I go into many of them in the book. Of course, the biggest thing is to, you know, exist as cleanly as possible, and not take in the fluoride and the chloride and the mercury and those kind of things.
And the aspartame.
Okay. The aspartame.
We're going to be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up today's program. And we hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting the book. We're going to carry it because we think Robert's done an excellent job of providing you the information you need to know for your health and your children's health. Well, Robert, why don't you go ahead and you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, well, the one thing that I'd like to say, and any parent out there listening or grandparent, is that if your child is having a problem, you know, a lot of times they look at, and this happened with me when I was growing up, you look at somebody and you say, what's wrong with them? You know, why are they doing this? Why are they being this way? If it's not something like a sickness or disease that, you know, like measles or mumps or something, you know, if it's a behavioral thing, there could be reasons that don't necessarily mean there's something wrong with the child, sociologically. To look at the kid and try to clean up their environment and get things right, to give them a chance for their body to function the way it's intended to. You know, people who are healthy are usually happy, loving, caring people. People who are in distress are the ones that go out and do something or create trouble or start a fight or steal or rob. And there's plenty of research that we've already touched on some about that. So if your kid's having some problems, look first at the source, which may be the environment or the food supply. And I think that would help not just for you to cope emotionally with this, but to get things on the right track. Plus, you'll be saving yourself a lot of misery down the road by saving yourself from diseases. Your medical bills will go down. I haven't been to a doctor in 20 years. I haven't been sick probably in 15. I mean, if you clean up your act and you eat right and you get the nutrition and you stay away from toxicity, there's no reason why the body can't function correctly.
And I thought that was one of the most interesting things was your analysis, that a quotation that many of the people in prisons today have been found to have very high levels of lead that has impacted on their brains.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and the reason why they're in there is because of their behavior, but it stems back to the lead. If they haven't been exposed to that, their behavior would not have changed.
We're just about out of time. Do you have a web page you'd like to get out?
Well, I have a little letter about the book. It's at www.healthbookban.com.
Healthbookban.com.
Right, and I don't really have any research articles up there. It's just basically talking about my book. But I'd encourage anybody that wants to buy it just to contact you and get it. You know, I'm happy to send you books, and you can sell them to people, and that's the easiest way to do it. I really don't have a website with any of this information on it,
the best thing
to do is to just get the book.
Well, the book is very inclusive. It has lots of references. It's very well done. God bless. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we will be carrying Robert's story. It's called The Truth About Children's Health, and you should read it, and you should take heed of what it's saying, because most people find it hard to believe that anybody would want to hurt children, but I always reply, of course there are people who want to hurt children. I mean, there are people who push abortion that's killed between 40 and 50 million children in this country. You mean there are people who don't want to hurt children? Of course there are, but you find it difficult to think that anything could be this evil or corrupt. But it really is a reality. Now, we certainly want to mention several things. First of all, we carry Robert's book. You can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927, The Truth About Children's Health. And believe me, our children are less and less and less healthy. We carry certainly the book by Dr. Russell Blaylock, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And, of course, we have 4 tape sets with Russell, and it goes into health life-saving health secrets. We have four tapes with Bill Sardi on ascorbic acid. We have so much information on health, and we're going to be putting increasing amounts of it out, because especially at this time in history, you need to have your health. And of course, we carry a number of books on, we have a book on statin drugs, we have books on genetically engineered food, we have the book The Miracle of Magnesium, and certainly Death by Medicine, by Modern Medicine, by Dr. Carolyn Dean, Death by Prescription, by Dr. Richard Stand. You need to have access to the information, and you need to help us get the truth out. So one of the things I want to mention is there is going to be a conspiracy conference. It's going to be on Memorial Day weekend. That's May 27th and 28th over at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in the Santa Clara area. And Jim Mars is going to be there, John DeCamp, William Thomas. I'm going to be speaking, Ted Gunderson. Some very fascinating people will be speaking. And so if you'd like to know more about it, why don't you call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. Or, of course, you can go to their website, conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com, and they have, you can find out about going there. And incidentally, I will have a booth there as well as speaking, and we hope to have a chance to see you there. But you should have advance reservations if you're going to go. That's the 27th and 28th of May over in Santa Clara at the Hyatt Regency. And then, of course, we certainly hope that many of you will go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, where you can actually look at all the books we have. And what's so difficult for people to believe is that there really are people out there who want you to be ill, who want to do harm to your children. And when you understand that, you can understand why they've concealed the truth about aspartame. And, of course, who's the major villain behind that and the legalization of aspartame, NutraSweet? Why, of course, Donald Rumsfeld, who insisted on sending an inadequate force over into the Middle East and of course, simply badgered the generals and fire those who wouldn't go along with them. And as a result, the war will be prolonged, and we will never win the war over there. It's going to continue, and our troops will be there, you know, indefinitely. And of course, who's the man who's making all the money off of the bird flu scare? Why, Mr. Donald Rumsfeld, because he, of course, is head of the corporation that has the patent, or he was the head of it. And somebody says his stock in that company that made Tamiflu initially is worth about $95 to $100 million. Now, isn't that nice? And, of course, we can thank Donald Rumsfeld for using his political influence to get the FDA to abandon all of its opposition to the legalization of aspartame and poisoning our children for the last 25 years. And then, of course, the water fluoridation. You need to get the book, The Fluoride Deception. You need to get my video, The History of Water Fluoridation, and the syllabus that goes with that. So much information out there, and so little time to tell you why. Number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Please pray for revival, because if our people don't turn back to God, is there any reason why God should ever bless this nation again? Please pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.